Since 2007, Tiffany Ferguson has been creating videos on YouTube. What were first recorded on her mom's Motorola Razr phone, along with some graphics using the one and only Microsoft Paint, Tiffany began her journey as a YouTuber with dreams of this becoming a career. Fast forward some 14 years later, and guess what? Tiffany Ferguson is creating some of the most informative, well-researched, and conscious videos on the platform. Her internet analysis series covers a wide range of topics, including the suburbs, why Americans are so obsessed with Target, dystopian real estate content, the out-of-control wedding industry, and asking the question, why does YouTube feel so lackluster and stale right now? This is Tiffany's third appearance on Chad and Steve Have a Podcast. Congratulations. It's a little medal in the mail. And we always have so much fun talking about all this stuff. So why don't we just get right into it? Put your hands together and welcome to the podcast, Tiffany Ferguson.
Woo! Thank you guys for having me back.
Hey, it's great to have you back. So I guess we should right away get this out of the way. You had a big event this year. You got married.
Yeah. I'm like, wow. It was a process. That's all I can say at this point. I'm like, people say planning a wedding is a lot. And I was like, yeah, sure, but I'm chill. No, it's still a lot.
What kind of a bride were you? Are you one of these that got like the magazines and were like flipping through and trying to design everything?
No, I was the one, because I was never the type to try to plan my wedding. Like I never had that vision. I was just like, you know, kind of standard stuff. I'm fine with that. I was the, I think I'm chill. I think I'm low maintenance. But then because I knew nothing, you realize you have to learn everything about weddings just to be able to start planning and like start collecting quotes. So I've learned more than I ever wanted to. And even after the wedding, I've still been like on wedding subreddits because now I'm like addicted to it. I'm like, I just want to keep reading about other people's weddings and their wedding drama and their planning issues. And like, so maybe I'll become a planner. I'd be the worst wedding planner of all time, though.
So. Well, you've got all this advice now. You can offer all this advice for getting wedding. Did everything go off without a hitch, or did you have any interesting stories?
No, it was great. I was so surprised because I was mentally preparing myself for all the possible things that could go wrong, which, like, weather, our entire reception and ceremony were all outside. So I was like, okay, weather could be a problem. Getting sick before your wedding would be... Mm-hmm. Literally, like, ruining the entire thing.
COVID wedding. Yeah, that would be bad.
And then, you know, the classic, like, family dynamics. You're like, is everyone going to be chill? Is there going to be any drama? Anyone get too drunk? But no, literally, the day was, like, perfect, which is shocking. There were, like, little things. Like, once we came home, my biggest complaints were, like, we had, like, a little guest book with the little Instax cameras. You know, those like little Polaroids. I came home and looked at the guest book and found that like all the little pictures were just dark. Like you couldn't even see people in them. So somehow it was on the wrong setting. So like my biggest complaint was like our little disposable, or actually I had disposables as well. They didn't turn out great either. So like our film pictures didn't work out well, but everything else was fine.
Well, who was taking the Polaroids? Was it just people taking their own Polaroids? Nobody noticed because it's instant.
I know.
You don't look at it and say, well, that's dark.
I assigned the job to my brother, but then I didn't think about the logistics of that he was in the family pictures while all those pictures were being taken. So technically, he couldn't be there at his job. But yeah, no, I was like, I was looking at it and I was like, my friends are smart. Like, why did nobody notice? These don't seem to be developing right. But yeah, I was like, oh, I only spent like $100 on like these little films and now they've all been wasted.
But. Well, people aren't familiar with Polaroids, you know. They're like, well, maybe it just needs to sit for a couple hours. Let it develop.
Maybe it just takes like a whole day to develop. No, but that's fine. And then, yeah, my disposable cameras. I love disposables. My friends and I used to take our little disposables around high school. That's when it was like coming back and like ironic because I used to use disposables as like an actual child to go on like field trips. But so yeah, I was like, I could trust my friends to just like take these disposables and take really cute candid pictures. But instead, as I'm getting the film back and Nathan and I are looking through the pictures, someone was just taking pictures of like a group from afar, backs of their heads. And they, it would just be like four of those in a row. And I was like, whoever did this to me hates me, clearly. They wanted to like ruin this for me. But I was like, it's fine. I'll be chill. It's all right. Luckily, we had a photographer. So obviously, all the formal pictures are done well.
I didn't even know you could still get those disposable cameras. I wouldn't even know where to get it developed.
They're just for weddings, actually. It's just for people to do this.
These days, I go to like a send in your film online thing. Right. Used to be Costco, used to be CVS, used to be everywhere. Yeah, now it's like, well, again, the disposables probably cost me $100 between like two cameras and getting those developed. So that one was okay.
You got to make a collage out of those really dark Polaroids or something. It was like the Black Wedding or something.
Exactly. I'm like, this was the peak of our photography skills. Just like probably using the indoor setting outside. I was like, wow, great. It's fine. But again, if that's my biggest complaint of the entire wedding day out of everything else that could have happened, you know, can't really complain.
Was there something that was like the most important part of your wedding? Like everybody kind of has their North Star of like, it has to be the food. I want everybody to come to my wedding and be like, oh, the food was so amazing at this wedding, or they played the best music or whatever. Did you have anything like that that was like, it needs to be this?
My philosophy the whole time, like even with like all my loved ones, because we had a lot of people coming from out of state, out of country, because Nathan's English. So he had like his handful of friends and family fly all the way over. So like my philosophy was, I want everyone to just relax and have a good time, which is again hilarious because weddings are inherently stressful. But like because everyone was spending so much money just to be there, I was like, okay, I want to make sure everyone's comfortable and that it's chill and that they have a fun time. And yeah, the food, I think the food was great. But yeah, you know, like I didn't have any super abnormal expectations. It's just like, because I haven't even been to that many weddings myself. Mm-hmm. I'm like the first of my hometown friend group to have a wedding. So I didn't even have any like standards to compare it to. But I was just like, I just don't want people to be sitting here like sweating, miserable, hungry, like hating the music. So, but luckily, like I have friends who love to dance in any situation. So like, there was always at least a group on the dance floor keeping it lively.
I just really quickly Googled the average cost of a wedding. Okay, so what state are you in? You're in East Coast.
New York.
You're in New York?
I moved and I have not announced it.
You have not disclosed it. Okay, so let's just...
I'm like, let's try to guess. There's only 50 options.
Let's just say that you're in Massachusetts because that's the most expensive state to get married. The average cost of a wedding in Massachusetts is $30,400.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for a one-day event, you know?
What's the cheapest? What state is the cheapest? And how cheap is it?
Well, it looks like Arkansas. Hey, you can get married for $12,000 in Arkansas. I'm on
That's less than half price.
Well, here in California, it's $26,000. So we're a little bit cheaper than Massachusetts. Not too. The average, though, is $20,000 across the board. $20,000 to get married. I mean, and you know, and this goes way back. I remember I got married like 150 years ago, but... And then it was like, there were so many people, and you know, there's like wedding seasons, you know, it seems like everybody you know all of a sudden starts getting married. But there were a lot of people who were really putting much more emphasis on the wedding rather than the marriage, I think. And these are the people that aren't together anymore because they were so hyper-focused with that wedding.
Yeah, I think I've heard I don't know if it's even true, like the idea that the more you spend on a wedding, the more likely you are to get divorced sooner, which I guess I could agree because I'm like, I can imagine. Well, we started out, I've had a very like almost an anti-wedding philosophy. I started out as like, I want a tiny wedding, like under 50 people, budget 10,000, quickly found out like that is doable. There's a subreddit called Weddings Under 10K. But you then obviously have to like DIY a lot of it. So the trade-off is like, you're going to have to be putting in a lot more work, or your friends and family are going to have different roles. And I was like, I also don't want people to be like essentially working our wedding. So yeah, we started out with our initial budget. And it's funny how over time, even trying to be aware of what you're spending and like not going for anything that you think is too unnecessary, it balloons. And yeah. I was losing it for a little bit as like the final invoices were coming in. I was just like, what have we done? why have we done this?
Well, do you think it's kind of it's a bit of a racket though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I even found myself, because I made that video about like the wedding industry is wild. I even found myself through the process, like, first of all, my dress ended up being a monster. It was great, but like, I spent way more than I planned to, forgot how much alterations cost, mm-hmm. and the alterations were about half as much as the dress itself. And without them, it's like unwearable. So I felt like the dress ran away. And then little things like getting my makeup done, I was like, oh, I'll do my own makeup. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, I'm going to look terrible in my pictures or it's not going to photograph well. So then you're spending like another $1,000 on just a makeup artist because they have minimums and, you know, you've got to make it worth their time. So yeah, very quickly, the things that I thought I could just be like, oh, we don't care about that. Even like party favors. I told Nathan from the beginning, I was like, party favors are dumb and they're a waste and most people don't pay attention to them, like, unless they're edible. And then he was like, well, then we can do candy, but we can do like some like British candies so that people can try like my favorites and then we can get some of yours. I eat vegan candy, which is so expensive. So we're buying like imported British candy and like expensive vegan candy. And I was like, I really hope people are eating these little candy bags because now we've spent X amount on like just a bunch of little baggies of whatever. So very quickly, like, because you're comparing yourself to other people, like Nathan kept coming through with the, well, my mom wants to know if it's just like a UK thing or an American thing, but like, do you do X? Are you going to have coffee at the wedding? I was like, why would we have coffee? They're like, well, some people might be expecting coffee. And I was like, okay. So like, yeah, very quickly, other people's expectations I found did like seep into my brain, even though I wanted to reject them. And it's very slippery. But luckily, like I've read horror stories of people who are like, my mom or my mother-in-law or like my parents have invited an extra 100 people on their own. And I'm like, luckily we didn't deal with that. But some people deal with some very like just outrageous additions.
There's a lot of family interference.
Exactly. It's not your wedding. It's the family's wedding, which
it's a family
to some extent, I did feel like that because we're both the first of our siblings to get married and have a wedding. So I think we felt a lot of that pressure to like perform for our families.
Do you feel any different now that you're married? What does it mean to you to be married?
It doesn't feel any different. I'll say like for us, marriage is kind of essential because of the immigration factor alone.
Oh, okay.
But you know, like in terms of like sentimental things, I think the process of like writing our vows was like really nice and romantic, but like it doesn't change your actual relationship. Aside from the fact that, yeah, now you can remind yourself, we spent thousands and thousands mm-hmm. of dollars to be legally married and to
now you're financially
that.
Committed. That's right.
Exactly.
This investment together. On a scale from 1 to 10, looking back at your wedding day, how cool were you as a like you were trying to get a cool vibe and everybody trying to be relaxed? How were you as a bride on that day?
No bridezilla, huh?
I know. Nathan called me a bridezilla at one point. I was like, I could show you bridezilla. It was about like, so, well, because every time he asked me, there are a million tiny decisions to make. Like exactly which song are you playing every 10 seconds, like through the whole first 3 hours of the wedding, whatever. So I would start just being overwhelmed and being like, I can't answer one more question. And Nathan, by the way, was like, he was probably carrying more than half of the planning. So it's not like I was doing it alone. But he'd ask me one small question and I'd be like, I can't, please stop. And he's like, you're fine. I was like, I'm losing it. But no, surprisingly on the day, I felt very calm. I didn't feel very like emotional. I usually cry very easily, but like I tried to hold myself back from that because I was like, frankly, like I have shit to do. I've got to get ready. I've got to make sure things are all in motion. And then once you get your makeup done, I was like, I'm not crying that off early. We can't mess around with this. Like, oh my God, I put my dress on. Everyone cries. We all have to get our makeup redone. We literally don't have time for it. So I felt more like a doll actually in the morning. Because it's like, you're just being moved from place to place. People are working on your face, your hair, And then when you go out to do pictures, literally, like, you know, the couple's standing there and everyone's just like swapping in and out for pictures next to you. So like, I literally just felt like, I was like, I'm not even a person right now. I'm just bride.
You're
and
a prop.
I'm supposed to stand here as a prop and we're going to take 1,000 pictures. But yeah, no, once we got to like, I was nervous about like the dances because like Nathan and I kind of choreographed a little bit of our like first dance. So I was nervous that I'd like forget it or not be able to dance in my dress, which I barely was able to. And then I did a little dance with my dad to Nickelback. Can you believe that?
Wow.
That was my choice though, because,
you can hang your head high in like Nickelback. It's okay. Now it's like post.
Oh, yeah.
It's
what Nickelback song?
We're in the post-ironic phase of Nickelback.
No, but they full circle.
I loved it, kind of ironically, but also kind of seriously. Like even as a kid, I was like, everyone hates Nickelback, and I'm different.
Yeah.
of course. So then we were trying to go through the classic father-daughter songs, but they just like aren't our style. And then I was like, you know what? Dad always had a Nickelback CD playing in the car. And I listened to some of their songs, and there's one called Never Gonna Be Alone.
Okay.
And it's like, it's just cute. And like, we didn't practice the dance beforehand. So I was so nervous. I was like, I've never seen my dad dance. I don't know what we're going to do out there. And literally, I think I was just wiggling around. And like, at one point, I was like, this.
Yeah, but more importantly, what was dad doing?
I think he was spinning around. I was spinning him. We only had like a minute of the song. So like there wasn't too much time to just be out there like not doing anything. But yeah, once all the dances and things were done, I was like, okay, now I get to like eat my food, which I'm excited about, and then just dance with my friends. So overall, I feel like it was a pretty chill day, but it took like, we still had a wedding planner handling all the stressful like small details and stuff. So it's a lot easier to be chill when someone else is making sure that if things go wrong, they're the person who handles it.
Give me your top tip. Anybody planning a wedding? Let's put it this way. What's the one thing you do not want to do when you're planning a wedding?
Where can you save money?
Ugh. Oh my God.
No pressure.
Yeah, I know. It's like a lot of little things. Okay. I would say the main big thing that's going to make a difference in your budget is how many people you invite.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that like some people culturally or in terms of their family, like their idea of a small wedding would be like 200 people. So like depending on your situation, your scale might be different. But like for us, I think our final guest count was around like 50 people. And like under 50 is considered a micro wedding. And that was like perfect for me. I loved that amount of people because I could actually see everyone and like hang out with them on the day. But if you're the type of person who does want, if you and your partner want a smaller wedding, stick to that. Because like, obviously if we had twice as many people and invited all my distant relatives, like our budget would have been about twice as much, which is way more than I would be willing to spend. So yeah, I would say be very strict about the guest list, though it is like, it's kind of bitchy. I almost love it.
Well, because you have to make decisions there, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, who's cool enough to come to Tiffany's wedding? And who do we not really want there? Who's going to be getting drunk?
It's so weird, like the process of, because to me, I was like, we got to draw a line. Like, I can't invite all my like second, third cousins. Like, that's just a lot of people. Plus ones, it's a lot. Or like, you know, people use different measures for like their rules. Like I have to have spoken to the person in the last year. We have to have hung out in the last year, whatever.
Instagram DM doesn't count either.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, how often do they react to my stories?
Yeah. But yeah, you were on our podcast twice and we didn't,
I didn't get an invite.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I have to have been on your podcast at least 10 times.
10 times.
Right. So maybe, I was going to say maybe next time. Maybe next time.
I was going to go there, but I thought, no way, Steve, don't do it. No, don't do it.
Not this.
Maybe next time we have just a big party to celebrate ourselves again. Yeah, never again.
Never again.
I don't ever want to have a party again. But it is kind of fun. It's like, again, we've had a little drama after with someone at least. But it's like, it was a weird situation where it was like, you're like, I don't get it. Like instead of them perhaps seeing like we had a very small wedding, like there are many reasons why you maybe didn't make the cut. Like, honestly, we had like it was mostly my side because obviously Nathan's again was coming from the UK. But it's like even 50 people goes by so quick. So like there are plenty of people we love and are close with or have like been close with before who just like, you don't make the cut because like I've got a lot of aunts and cousins and my parents. I've got a kind of big family. So yeah, but it's, I don't know. It's such a weird thing.
You gotta be cruel.
But again, I'm not a party person. Like I never even usually do anything on my birthday. So I'm not used to this whole like, let's make the guest list. Who's going to be on the exclusive list?
And it's all about me. It's all about me.
Yeah, and it's about me. It's my day.
So I'm going to seamlessly segue into what is it like to plan a wedding and maintain a YouTube channel at the same time?
Honestly? Okay, this year's been not a nightmare, a lot of good things, but like exhausting. In 2022, we moved from New York to undisclosed place.
We decided it's Massachusetts.
It's Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's definitely not Massachusetts. So confusing.
Checking that out.
So yeah, we moved, immediately adopted a dog.
Oh.
Because he happened to be available at the time. And we're like, we love this little rescue. Let's go get him. And then after a few months realized we did not like where we were living and we wanted to move again. And in the middle of this, we decided if we don't have our wedding this year, it's never going to happen. So then we decided let's throw wedding planning into the mix. And so in this year, we've moved twice, adopted a dog, planned and had an entire wedding. So like every time we moved, I would almost have to take like weeks off of work because you end up like packing and moving and you know, having to buy new things and rearrange things takes up so much of your time. Or at least for me, it's like, I never want to move again. So yeah, this year...
Well, just the mental stress of having to just, you're writing scripts and all of this stuff and it's got to try to play into all of that.
Yeah, because usually I use my like sponsor deadlines as forcing me to get my work done, which is what I'm in right now. I have one due basically today. I'm like, it's fine. But yeah, so then while we were moving and doing all this stuff, I was obviously like, okay, I'm not going to give myself a sponsor in the middle of us moving because I know that's not going to happen. But then I ended up just working a lot less than I would have wanted to this year. But it's like, I've been very busy. It's just that I couldn't fit any more work into my schedule. So I've been like kicking myself, looking at my like, my trend of my videos over the year, like views are going down and I'm like, the algorithm hates me. It's happening. So it's been very tough, but it's like, there was no other way. Like I could not have done much more. And so that's been a tough thing to grapple with. I'm already like psyching myself up for next year. I'm like, we're going to have to get shit done. But I'm also like, my video that I'm currently making is about laziness and basically about like, I disagree with the idea of like toxic work culture. And I think that like rest is incredibly important in drawing these boundaries. So on one hand, I'm like, I've probably done what's best for myself in terms of like letting myself work less this year. But my bank account and my views say differently. They're like, no, you could have worked more. We could have benefited from that. Again, especially in planning a wedding. Yikes.
How much do you pay attention to your analytics? Or are there particular analytics that you take a look at for your videos?
Typically, I don't because it just, to me, like a lot of analytics just feel too granular. And I'm like, you know what? I don't know how to change the like, click-through rate, I guess, different titles, different thumbnails, or how long the average viewer stays in a video. I'm like, out of all the things I need to do with a video, I can't be like, how do I make them watch until 10 minutes in or whatever. So what I do pay attention to is like, for a long time, my average metric was if I can get 100,000 views on the video in the first 24 hours, like that was like normal for me. And then within the first week, maybe like 200 to 250,000 views. That was like a year ago. That was like a pretty reliable average for me. And then I would be very casual. I'd be like, oh, my video got 400,000 in a week. That's interesting. I was taking it for granted majorly. But I also think like, because everything is so fickle, I like didn't want to believe that it was permanent anyway. So I was very like relaxed about it. I was like, oh, that's weird. This video is doing very well. Don't count on that to continue. But yeah, these days, like, I find that it's been a lot harder for videos to hit 100,000 within a day, which is that's a lot. But it's hard, like, adjusting to that old metric, being like, that was my standard for a good year or two. And now that it's, like, slowing, I am a little bit scared about, like, how do I recover? Is it possible to recover? Because, like, hello, I've made videos about, like, YouTuber fluctuations over time, and, like, it is just the nature of YouTube and social media that people's attention sometimes just
If I could submit, I don't think you're alone in what's happening. I think a lot of people are experiencing the same thing. It's very similar to that video you had recently on, does YouTube feel really lackluster now? I actually made a video on that topic. I mentioned you, it's on my second channel, about how you described a feeling that I was feeling and a lot of people seem to have been feeling. Do you think that that's still happening, or you think we're kind of coming out of this feeling of like, ugh, I'm just exhausted with YouTube?
It's hard because still as a viewer, I find myself not, it's very interesting. I do try to pay attention to like, what kind of videos am I clicking on? Because I feel like I'm representative of the type of viewer who would watch my own videos. So I'm like, okay, if I'm not watching my type of videos, if I'm looking for something lighter, or if I'm just on TikTok, which I mentioned in that video, it's like a scary trend, because then I'm like, if that's like a big audience trend where people are just spending less time on YouTube or they want lighter content, then what am I supposed to do about that in terms of my stuff? I don't know. But it is something I've kind of noticed, because I pay attention to like my peers, and I'll notice like, I can generally remember like what their view metrics used to be, and like, do they seem to be having a slow time? Have they mentioned anything about having a slower time? And I actually made a spreadsheet recently, like trying to compare.
No.
Yeah. Cause I was like, this feels weird, cause I don't even look at my own metrics, but I was like, I want to know, is it me and me posting less and all those other things, topics that maybe people aren't interested in, or is it also a trend among like our shared audience? Cause I was looking at people, you know, in the YouTube studio, it shows you like other channels that your viewers watch.
People are watching. Yeah.
So that's a pretty good, comparison. But the last thing I've been scared about is like my brand deal offers have slowed down. Like I have my management, but I keep getting like less offers in a typical month than I would. And I'm like, that's scary, because obviously a big bulk of my income comes from sponsorships. And for a long time, I was like, I would get way more offers than I could accept in a month. Like I can only do 1 to 2 of these videos in a month. So I was like, oh, as long as I'm getting a couple solid ones from like the brands I like to work with, I'll be good. And then all of a sudden, you know, the recession, I was like, is it possible that perhaps these companies are readjusting their marketing and maybe not investing as much in YouTube stuff? And that's been scary, because I'm like, I can keep chugging along and making videos, but if I'm not getting the amount of sponsors that I need, that drastically changes my situation.
Well, you just need to do a bunch more Raid Shadow Legends.
That's I mean, they do keep banging down my door every day.
I get those like at least 2 a week. It'll say, "Dear Steve Ramsey - Woodworking for Mere Mortals, we love your content and think you would be a great fit." I'm like, you do not think I would be a great fit at all. I'm like the last one who would be a great fit. But you know, the sponsored things, when I was doing a lot of sponsored spots, and I did a couple more fairly recently. And the thing that surprised me is that a couple of them were wanting like a guaranteed 100,000 views in the first week. And they said, if you don't do that, then we expect, they call it like a make good. I'm like, no, that is not happening.
No.
I'm not giving you free ads.
View guarantees are scary. And I used to deal with that before I had a management like team handling my brand deals. I had like one situation with a sponsor where I don't even think they had any sort of guarantee in the agreement. But like, we did the standard sponsorship, and then they emailed me like a week later, and they were like, we didn't get enough downloads like that we were expecting, so we want you to just make another video. And I was like, no. And they're like,
yeah, it ain't happening.
Pay me
they
again.
They literally were like, well, if you want to be like nice, then I guess you could like post about us on Instagram or something. And I was like, this is not about being nice.
What?
You're making me feel like shit just because like you putting your sponsorship in my video is no guarantee for your idea of like how many clicks. Like, it's not, that's not how that works. I can't force my audience to click the link or to download the thing. I have a very, I think I don't know if it's an interesting idea about sponsorships, and I hope my sponsors are not listening. Love you. But like, you know, I'm very like, it's my job to do exactly what you're asking of me. I'll read, you know, the prompt very carefully, and I'll see if I agree with the talking points, because I don't want to say something I don't believe. And then, yeah, it's my job to say those things. Put the link in the description. Like, I'm not going to go above and beyond for like every brand that like you're paying me for my time to do this video to be ad space for you. And I'm making the ad. Like, I like my sponsors to be like literally just ad spots. I know other types of creators do different sorts of integrations, but like with my sort of content, it makes sense to be like, this is a commercial break. Let me make this very clear. This is the sponsor. And like, you know, I appreciate my sponsors, and I do, of course, work with brands that like understand that's how I work. Occasionally a company will be like, I had one recently be like, can you not mention that it's a sponsor? I was like, no, like literally legally.
It's not how it works.
You must be new to this rodeo.
Yeah, I was like, excuse me, no, thank you. But so it's tough.
Do you think your content is going to survive this period of that's not the content which is currently, like right now people love shorts and TikTok and shorter form content, but we can also clearly see that we're starting to crest over that, and people are like, all right, I personally am starting to move back to long form content on YouTube. I'm leaning into some of the people who are putting out great video essays right now. So are you banking on internet analysis just getting through this cooler period to return to what people are probably going to go back to? Or do you think this is going to be a switch which you're going to have to address the type of content that you produce?
It's hard because it's like there are so many components. First, like I know that tactically I should have been on TikTok from 2020 when it was first, you know, becoming more popular in the mainstream. But I'm scared of TikTok. I've mentioned that. Like, I'm scared of just the nature of that algorithm feels so different to me, which is probably funny to hear as somebody who like gets X number of views on YouTube. But to me, I'm like, TikTok, you could just be thrust into the algorithm. And then all of a sudden you've got like, you know, very mean comments. TikTok comments are like, I'm an anonymous user of TikTok. And I like it that way because I can just enjoy it and like read other people's comments and not have to deal with my own. But I know that tactically, like, I should be doing TikToks, I should be taking advantage of shorts and reels to try to get things out there, even just to refer people back to my channel. I'll probably think about that as a strategy in the new year. Every time Instagram is like, we'll give you a reels bonus, I'm like, I'm like, should I be doing this? Is that worth
every
my time?
Every time I log on to Instagram or get ready to post something, they're like, do you want to take advantage of the real bonus?
I'm like,
I don't know, I'm just posting a dumb video.
I'm
like, tell me, what am I supposed to do?
I know, I'm like, I don't love reels, but like, I'm like, but that bonus I might reconsider.
Hit me up with that bonus.
I know.
TikTok does the same thing. They've got their bonuses, I guess, over there. And of course, shorts, YouTube. But you know, I gotta say, YouTube has got their shit together with the shorts, because they've taken them off of the regular feed on their phone, which was a huge thing, because that's what everybody was complaining about.
Exactly.
So now they just sit on the shorts shelf, but I don't know if they get as much attraction as they used to.
Exactly. It's so hard because, I've thought the same thing, even though like reels kind of annoy me, or not reels, shorts. For the same reasons, like seeing them pop up in my subscription box, thinking someone made a full video, but it's just a clip. Like, I totally understand why the creators are doing it. And again, I should be doing it, probably. It's like, I want my sub box or my homepage to look a certain way. I don't want it to be cluttered with the wrong types of content. I'm glad they're kind of listening to people being like, hey, can you make shorts less annoying? Or like, can you put them away so that I can look at them
can
when
you
I
stop
want
being
to?
A dick about the shorts?
Exactly. Yeah.
But you know, I gotta say that the long format content, and I'm talking like videos over 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, seems to be just as popular, and YouTube seems to be really promoting those as much as the shorts. It's like the 8 to 10 minute video is kind of dead right now. I mean, if you really want to get, but these long, and I've been experimenting with this. My last couple of videos I've made have been very long, and holy crap, the revenue on those, the views, everything, the
engagement
is way, way more than an 8 minute video. It's kind of crazy. And I don't even have to put as much effort into those because I just set up a camera and do a voiceover. I really think that, and I think it's because so many people are listening to videos today. And that's the way I watch a lot of your videos. I can listen to them.
Yeah. And it's funny because I haven't done a video. First of all, every time I try to write a video now, I'm like, okay, I've got to make it a little shorter because the process ends up taking me too long. I'm like, let's make this a simple one. We can make this a 15 to 20 minute video. Impossible. My last video,
39 minutes later,
my rough cut of this video was 50 minutes. I was like, that's too much. And so now I'm in the process of trying to cut it down. It'll probably be around 30, 35, which has been my average lately. So I'm good with like doing the long form content. The one thing I've been thinking about, which I wanted to answer in the last question, is like, it's hard because I know that this format, commentary, video, essay, whatever you want to classify my videos as, I know that this genre is very popular, but again, it's just the nature of YouTube. Like maybe my videos and like other creators that have had their time, like it's natural that you'll have your popularity and then a lot of new wonderful creators come in and like it's the attention economy. So viewers might just be going elsewhere. So I know that like, even over
time.
We've
all gone to Sunny V2.
Sunny mm-hmm. V2. I've got to Google this.
Mm-hmm. That's the hot video essay right now. But I digress.
No. I literally have to Google this. I'm like, I must know. Sunny V2. No, but like, it's funny because I see these small creators, initially small. Like when I had my first initial boost, I like remember what that was like. Oh, I don't think I've even seen this. I have not even seen these thumbnails.
So much gossip. So much gossip.
That's fascinating.
Stuff.
Okay. Mm. Where's my, I lost the tab. I don't know where you guys went. my 40 tabs. But yeah, so it's like, I know that on YouTube, like it is 100% natural and inevitable that many of my viewers will stick around. I will still hopefully get some new viewers, but like, you know, it's like a wave. Things can come and go. Water gets displaced. Love this metaphor. But I have been thinking, and for a long time I wish Internet Analysis was just a podcast. I wish I had a co-host, and I wish I didn't have to ever be on camera again. Because literally like filming my videos and sitting down and having to like present it is one of the hardest parts. And I wish that I could just sit with my microphone and like go over my script and talk it through. So that would just be a lot easier in terms of like my time and my workflow. Because I love podcasts and I know that a lot of people do listen to commentary sorts of videos as like a podcast. So I'm like, I wish I could just do that. But it's also scary because if I make that change and then all of a sudden some of my viewership is like, this is not what we want. We love the graphics. We love seeing your face.
That would be a pretty drastic change.
I know. I'm like, is it? Can't you just listen.
Well, you do
just
have the podcast version. I've listened to it on Spotify before. It even includes the video on there too.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, I like that that's a possibility now because again, I'm definitely a listener type of person. I've got my YouTube premium. I love to just have a video playing at all times.
Price is going up.
Is it? Oh my God. What do they do? I'm like, I'll keep paying for it, but they've got me.
Google's struggling. We need to support them.
Poor Google.
Poor little company.
That was an awkward pause.
I know. I was like, I think Chad was saying something.
Yeah.
It's Chad's fault.
There you go. It's my fault. What are you watching right now? Who's like the YouTuber that when they upload a video, you are all over it?
Oh my God. Let me pull up my sub box. I can definitely say my friend Kelgore, her videos literally every time she does a combination of, you know, some regular kind of commentary videos. And then she does these live streams that she calls Loser TV. And those are my favorite because usually they're like about an hour and I just feel like I'm hanging out with Kelgore. But yeah, I find that like anytime she uploads, I watch it immediately. Let me go into my sub box. I do feel bad because I definitely haven't been keeping up with my subscriptions as much as I used to. I used to watch probably 6 hours of YouTube a day. And then it's like, I also watch obviously a lot of channels with long content. So that makes it hard to watch all of it. But it's like, even a lot of my mutuals, my peers, my friends, like, I haven't been able to keep up with their videos because I've just been not watching as much YouTube. So
You're probably getting all of this wedding content now that YouTube is saying you need to watch.
They're like, everything to know after your wedding. I'm like, there's more? Oh, no. Let me see. What else is in my subscription?
But, you know, that also plays into this whole kind of lackadaisical feel about YouTube. And I'm feeling that, too, as I look through any of my subscription feed. And, man, I'll bet you I watch 5% of those videos that come through there. And I know they're good videos. I subscribe to these channels, but it's too much.
I know. I'm looking through I'm like, even just in the last few days, like, I've had so many people upload that I cannot keep up with them. I find that I'll add like 20 videos to my watch later every day.
That's
maybe
what
watch
I do.
Two of them. And then I'm like, there are so many good videos that I just simply cannot keep up with.
So I think that my problem is that watch later, because it's like my email inbox or something. So what I do is I put things, okay, I'll just watch it later. But there's so many videos in my sub box that I'm going through. So they all kind of, the ones I want to see that look interesting, I'll put in the watch later, which kind of becomes its own thing. So I've spent my whole YouTube session going through, scrolling, and putting them in my watch later. And so then I think, okay, then I'll watch them later. I'm done for now. And then I come back the next time. I should watch some YouTube. Oh, and I go through my sub box or whatever, and I start doing the same thing, just adding more to this watch later box, which I never actually watch later. I think I have like 1,500 unwatched videos or something on there. It's pretty bad.
Absolutely. Let me see what mine's at. Mine's at 2,451, and I've cleared it out before. That's bad.
Oh, no.
I just thought of something that I noticed because I heard another YouTuber talking about how they keep getting recommended like a lot of channels they don't watch and like a lot of just like random stuff. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I looked at my homepage on YouTube desktop and I noticed like the top 8 videos it shows you right at your homepage. In the corner, they kept showing me a small channel I've never watched with like 3 views and sometimes like not even a genre I watch. And I kept refreshing it and it kept just like recommending one little small channel, another little small channel, which I love small channels actually being promoted. But I was like, YouTube's missing though with that these are never like videos I'd want to click on. So like it was an interesting moment because I was like, clearly they've changed a little something about the homepage. So I sent it to my friend and she said that she wasn't having the same thing on her homepage. And I was like, what's going on here? But the interesting thing was the other like 7 out of 8 videos were like mostly people I'm subscribed to, mostly videos already in my watch later, but they just kept rearranging the same like 8 videos. So YouTube's like, Tiffany, you want to watch these 7 videos. And I'm like, you're right. I do, but not now. And yeah, so that was really fascinating to me because I was like, why these videos? Why these particular people out of all my subscriptions? And that was really interesting because I was like, if this is happening on other viewers' pages, like, are my videos ever going to reach that magical, weird mix-up of recommendations? Or are they just not one of those select few?
You just get stuck on somebody's homepage forever until they finally say, all right, damn it, I'll watch it.
That's true, though, because honestly, sometimes getting over-recommended a video makes me sick of it before I even click it. So maybe you're right. Maybe that's not even an ultimately good thing.
It's not a good strategy.
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard, again, like, with click-through, like, I love when YouTube's like, your video's not reaching its average. I'm like, I don't even know what you mean by that. I'm like, that's too much calculations for me. But it's interesting, like, imagining, like, the viewer experience of, like, when I'm looking at something and I'm recommended a video for the first time, does it click for me? Does it hit, like, within that first half a second I'm looking at it? Because it really is such a split-second decision of, like, am I going to watch that video right now, or is it going to go to the Doom, you know, watch later folder?
Have you ever watched entire videos just in the feed? You know, that autoplay thing where it just starts playing?
No.
Oh, yeah, I totally have.
I have to read the comments. Every time I'm watching a video, I'm scrolling through the comments.
It's usually on the shorter videos, and I'll find myself, I'll pause, see if the first few seconds, like you said, are interesting. And then I start going through it, and it's got captions on there and everything. So you could just start watching it. And then I'm like 3 minutes into it. I'm like, why am I not just clicking on the damn video at this point?
That's the TikTok in your brain. You're like, I don't even want to click. I don't even want to press a button.
I can't be bothered.
I'm just going to let it play. I'm like, no, I've never done that.
Oh, man. You know, you recently had an interesting video on mobile games, and I wanted to talk to you about this because I am not a gamer by any stretch of the mean imagination, although I do play Words with Friends, and I do.
and that's how you know he's not a gamer, and I play, because his game is Words with Friends.
And I play Wordle.
Wordle. You're still playing Wordle?
I'm still playing
Wordle. And Words with Friends. I'm like, you're living in the past, but it's okay.
I play Words with Friends with one friend, my wife. And one game takes us like a week because I'll forget, and then the notice will come up as a... It's your turn to play the thing. So it's like this ongoing thing that for years, this has just been going on. I don't know. It's just a thing.
Very consistent.
But I talked to my son about your video. My son's younger than you. He's like 25. I don't know how old
I just turned 27.
Being presumptuous.
27.
But he is a gamer. Like, and his thoughts on mobile games are like, no, that's just trash. It's garbage. I said, well, you should watch Tiffany's videos because she has kind of a defense for mobile games. Like, they're not so bad. And the money somebody spends on a mobile game, even with the microtransactions, ends up being about what you would spend on a AAA game. So I thought that was an interesting take on it. I think his main beef is just the microtransactions. Like, they get you. You have to pay in a little extra if you want to get any further on these games.
Yeah. I'm still conflicted, and I'm still making that video. I made it because I fell into a hole of being addicted to a couple games. But then in the process of writing the video, I became addicted to a few games again. Embarrassing. So I still have a game that I'm literally playing every day, probably at least almost an hour a day. I don't know. It's horrible. So like the worst part about it for me, again, as I was like so conflicted in making that video, I was like, is this even a defense of mobile games? I don't know, because on one hand, they're not that great and I'm spending money on
they're
nothing.
They're kind of crappy.
But then on the other hand, I'm like, it's all my joy and it's all my serotonin in a day and I love checking my little game. So I'm still conflicted about that. And like,
what are you playing? Like Farmville?
What is the game?
Non-spawn. Clash of Clans. It's Marge Mansion.
There you go.
It's horrible. They have a Halloween event right now. I'm like, it's embarrassing. It's so embarrassing.
It's an event. We have to do it.
It's so, like,
it's like Club Penguin for adults.
Exactly. Now that I've especially done the extra research, I know even more than before just how much it's manipulating me. And I'm actively like, yeah, it's working. Thank you.
You can manipulate me all you want.
You'd think I would know better at this point, but it might have made it worse.
And now it starts early because my daughter's 4 years old and got the Barbie Dreamhouse app or game or whatever
it
is.
Does she have an iPad?
So she has her, we have an iPad, which is quote unquote her iPad now. And so she enjoys playing the games, but she at 4 years old understands that games kind of hook you in with like playing it. And then it's like, well, if you want to finish this mission, you need to like unlock these two characters. And if you want to unlock this character, it's 8. And then you have a 4 year old coming to you and being like, can you? It's asking for something along with the $9.99 a month. But to your point about the the Halloween update happened, and she's like, "Well, I want to put jack o' lanterns in all over the house, so it was $2.99 for the Halloween update pack."
You're like,
and I do it because I'm a
can't we get
I'm
real pumpkins,
dad,
honey? But she's like, "No, I only want Barbie pumpkins in the game."
So literally the cost of a real pumpkin, child, and we can cut that one.
And we can eat the seeds. That's hilarious. That's so sweet.
Steve, how much time do you play? How much time do you spend playing your word games? And if you want someone else to play, I'll play the words with friends.
Well, so
I'm your friend.
Here's my deal. I play Words with Friends is really sporadic. So I maybe like 2 minutes a day every third day or something. It's like really just out there. It's just like these ongoing long, it's like a internet chess match or something. It just goes on forever.
In your case, it's just words with friend.
No, so Wordle. I do the Wordle in the morning. Okay, so Wordle, yes, there's two
Wordle
things.
In the morning.
You solve a five letter, and yeah, I don't even know why I play it because they're pretty easy. I've never had to like go through all six layers of Wordle. I don't know.
Okay, brag.
It's pretty,
whoa.
So humble brag there.
Humble brag on Wordle.
And here's the thing is the six letter ones are actually a little bit easier than the five letter ones because there's more five-letter words probably to choose from. But so I do that. It's like the first thing when I get up in the morning is like I do this Wordle, and that takes me about 10 minutes. And then I do the New York Times crossword puzzle. I do that every day too.
That's respectable.
That's not really an app, I guess. Well, I mean, it's not really a mobile app because I pay a yearly fee for the crossword puzzles, but mostly I want to do the Friday and Saturday puzzles.
And your games are teaching you stuff, you're learning.
Nah, not a thing.
Using the words.
Using the words, that's it.
Yeah. Speaking
The Times crossword puzzle does. Yeah, that's interesting. I like that a lot.
I have a side note about learning. I've been wanting to do like trivia nights for a long time. And ooh. I couldn't find a place that had them near me. I was like, I just don't know where to go. Like, just kept Googling trivia night, please. I finally found one, convinced my friends to join. And tonight I'll be going to my fourth consecutive trivia night. Uh-oh.
Whoa.
But I immediately, because I feel like I'm pretty good at trivia. I'm a pretty decent person. But like now I'm like, I need to study for trivia. So like the other day I was.
So now this is a whole new thing.
Practice. Yeah.
It's like now I just need to know a little bit about everything and retain all that information forever. Because I swear, if I learn a fact, it comes up in trivia and I forget it, I will lose my mind. Like, for example, there was a question about Angela Lansbury when she passed a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, I saw something in the news about that. And it asked, like, what show is she in? And I was like, I don't know. And I was like, that's so embarrassing because it was in the news, like, today.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, there's a website called Sporkle that has, like, just thousands of user-generated quizzes and trivia. And now I'm like, oh. I'll play it every day and try to be like, I got to retain all this information about 70s directors just in case.
Well,
it comes
up. Know, this is important because I think that we've been trained over the past 20 years not to really retain too much information because it's easily obtainable. So I can learn something and then know it for the minute I need to know that information.
Right.
And then I just forget it again.
That's true. And I think like, cause I'm a chronic Googler, like it drives Nathan crazy. But like, if he says something and I'm like, I have to fact check that, I have to know. if my phone is out of commission, I'm like, there are so many things I didn't get to look up and I'll never know if I was right or wrong. So like, I feel like being a chronic Googler helps and it's helped my random bank of knowledge. But you're totally right that like sometimes I'll Google something.
It almost trains your brain.
He'll ask me, what was it? And I go, what? what did I look up again? So
I guarantee that tomorrow I will have forgotten that a wedding in Massachusetts cost $30,000.
I think it was
maybe now that I've said it a few times.
Yeah.
Massachusetts, and most expensive wedding. Arkansas, yes, least expensive. You never know when this will
go
come
to
up.
Arkansas.
there's a trivia.
Arkansas. Tiffany now lives in Arkansas. That's what I'm going to remember tomorrow.
Yeah.
What she said? I think that was it.
Misconstrued.
What is fact? What is trivia preparation?
What's this deal about laziness? Can you give us a clue on your thesis here?
So my whole thing was I've always felt like a very lazy person. Like in school, I was always like a straight A student, but I didn't try hard. That classic like gifted kid. There's been a lot of discussions about that. I think I was naturally good at academics and test taking. And then obviously you hit a point usually in like college where you're like, oh, you actually do have to try and put in effort. But since then, especially since graduating from college, I've felt so lazy as like a full-time YouTuber because like I would be sleeping in late and I like wasn't, you know, you see the sorts of YouTubers who are like, I don't sleep and I put out a video every day and I will never
hustle,
you know, hustle guys.
They're so full of shit.
And that is not me at all. I'm like, I'm literally the opposite. People. I'm like, I love my sleep. I love my rest. I want to do, frankly, like the minimum amount of work that I can, but still survive and pay my bills and do well. So like,
you're going to quiet quit yourself.
I'm kind of quiet quitting my own life in a job way. Jesus. But yeah, so like, it's an exploration of like what laziness is, and the title is going to be Laziness Does Not Exist, because that's a book that I used as a reference. But I love that take because, well, first of all, do you believe it? True or false? Does laziness exist?
I would say at times, yeah. At times I feel totally lazy, but I don't know if I'm just putting that on myself or not, or if it's just, and I think you're right. It's like these expectations. You see other people who seem to have, they have their shit together. I kind of feel like everybody has their shit together and I don't.
Exactly. I think everyone feels that way. Yeah, it's just you. We were all thinking.
Chad's like, yeah, it's you. No. You're lazy.
It's you, Steve.
No, but I think everyone feels that way. They feel like they are uniquely lazy and irredeemably horrible, and no matter how much you work and how much you get done, you're never doing enough. So yeah, I wanted to like analyze that, and it's been a little like therapeutic for myself, but I have felt, it's so ironic, in the process of making this video, like the other day I wasn't feeling great, so I like had to take the whole day off and just sleep because I wasn't feeling well. And on one hand, I'm beating myself up for that, going, oh, you were supposed to film today, you're supposed to be working. But I'm like, the entire point, it's literally in my script. It says like, you need rest. Like, we live in a society that doesn't allow us that rest. Like, many people don't even have sick days or healthcare. So like, everything in our culture is pushing us toward being workaholics. But like, I'm trying to actively like stop myself from doing that. But I still caught myself through the process of making this video being like, oh, I'm being lazy. It's like, it's so twisted. And again, even like the mobile games video, by the time I reached the end of making a video, you would think I'd be like, yeah, I'm 100% in my thesis. But then I'm like, well, spoiler, my conclusion was, I think laziness can exist, but what if it's a good thing? What if it's a necessary thing? What if laziness is just us taking the rest and the relaxation time that we need? And I was like, in that case, I will gladly be lazy and I will lay on the couch and I'll play my mobile games and I will, you know, recover so that I can do all this capitalist work shit again.
It does beg the question, you know, you have to define what exactly do you mean by lazy? You know, I mean, just resting? Is that lazy?
Yeah. Sleeping in past what time another person sleeps in.
It's lazy.
That makes me lazy.
Exactly.
I don't know.
It's fascinating.
Do we put that label on other people, or is it mostly put upon ourselves?
That's something I address in the video as well. Because in a survey I did, I found that a lot of people said that. They said, I would never judge anyone else or call them lazy, but I call myself lazy every day. Even if I do a full day of work, I'm doing all the other things on my to-do list, and I literally take a few minutes to myself. And in those moments of rest, I call myself lazy. And it's like, again, society's really... warped our brains to believe and internalize these things. Yeah. But there are reasons that like laziness as a narrative has been like so ingrained in us, and we're taught to fear it and to think that lazy people should be hated and that they're not valuable. And so, yeah, there's so much to it. And so it's been a fun one.
Do you think it's always been like this, or do you think it's mostly social media and all, is social media just fucking us all up?
As usual, it's a contributing factor, I think. I mean, it kind of goes back in the US to like the Puritan, not, is it Puritan? I should know this. It's in my script. Yes, the Puritan work ethic. Am I? Yeah. Protestant. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, idiot.
Protestant. There you go.
The Protestant
not
work
like
ethic.
Those Catholics.
But the Catholics also believe that sloth is a sin. So it's a whole thing. But it's funny because this also led me deeper down a rabbit hole of like, one thing that I think I'll do in like a part two is I'm interested in like how many hours, because now we believe arbitrarily that 40 hours a week is the amount that everyone should work minimum.
It's so arbitrary.
But that only happened because labor, you know, unionized people fought for 8-hour workdays. But it's like, I've been trying to read into the history of labor, and I found like, vague things that say like way back in hunter-gatherer days, like people only worked a couple hours a day, except in busy seasons when you'd be like harvesting a lot. And so, like, I keep trying to go back and find almost proof that, like, working 40 hours a week is not natural or it's not required. Like, it's literally made up. It is arbitrary. And it's interesting because obviously with, like, industrialization, you had, like, people working in factories 12 hours a day. So on one hand, we're like, oh, it could be worse. But on the other, I've been thinking about, like, automation and how this was supposed to make things easier for us. Yet even with all this increased productivity and efficiency, people are still supposed to be sitting at a desk or online doing their job or working wherever they are for that arbitrary amount of hours. So now I'm on a whole brigade about work.
Wow.
Well, see, I also have this theory that if you post in an Instagram post, hashtag hustle every day, you're probably a lazy person. You're covering for something.
You're projecting. Hashtag
entrepreneur.
Maybe. I should start branding myself that way. Maybe I'll feel better.
I remember reading an article about Cristiano Ronaldo, the famous soccer player, possibly one of the most famous people in the world on a like global popularity scale. And he was like, I sleep 10 to 12 hours a day. And people are like, oh, that's crazy. And he's like, well, sleep's restorative. I'm an athlete. Like, that's literally the most important thing I can do to my body and da-da-da. And I think the hustle culture has like pushed us to the point where when you don't operate at this crazy level of like everything being work related, like not working or sleeping just instantly classifies as lazy. And I think we have a bad definition of lazy because sleep is actually really, really good for your brain. It's incredibly good for your circulatory system. It rests all your muscles. It allows you to provide for the next day. And I had this conversation with my daughter, again, living through life and figuring out like all the weird shit that we put ourselves through. Like teaching a four-year-old, like, because she was like, what's a weekend? I'm like, well, weekends, the 2 days at the end of the 5 days that we work. And she's like, well, why do we work for those 5 days? I'm like, that's just the way it is.
She's asking the best questions.
That's it.
Get to bed. You've got school in the morning.
She's like, I'm in favor of a four-day work week. You're like, what have you been reading?
And I support you. You and your generation, go and make a three-day work week the thing. Exactly. Please change because everything that we're teaching you, it just doesn't seem right.
I was reading somewhere where these companies, like a lot of these tech companies like Netflix, maybe Google, they don't have certain hours. They don't expect you to put in an 8-hour day or whatever. But what they find is that people actually work way more than 8 hours a day because you're sort of looking over your shoulder like, well, why is that guy leaving? He hasn't been here. So the employees are sort of like, I don't know, Hunger Games.
That one hustle guy in an office ruins it for all the other people because they're like, fuck, Jim's here all the time. Now I got to be like Jim or else I'm going to lose, right? I need to check my BlackBerry when I go home or I need to...
It's fascinating. I've seen so much about how like work from home is changing work. And at first we thought, oh, this is a great thing. But now we're seeing things, I think it's called the proximity bias, where say you have a hybrid job. If you're choosing to work from home more often, your boss is going to overlook you for like promotions. So they're going to have a bias toward the workers who are in the office in their proximity. So like, it's so twisted because we're trying to make these advancements to make work easier for people. My belief is like, again, kind of with the sponsor thing, you do your job and you shouldn't be expected to do more. You shouldn't be expected to go above and beyond. If you want me to do more, pay me more, like make it part of my job. And so, yeah, this whole idea of like, is work from home helping us or is it forcing more people to be on the clock more than ever? Like instead of spending 2 hours commuting in a day, you just have to work 2 more hours. And it's like, it's very twisted. And it's also interesting because obviously I'm witnessing this as someone who's not working that sort of job. So everything I read is like, you know, I can relate in terms of my experience doing like service types of jobs, but I've never worked in an office. And I'm like, how would I behave in an office? I think I'd be terrible. I'm too tired. I think it would be definitely be a big adjustment from what I'm used to. But like, yeah, like part of what makes me angry is like, yeah, again, arbitrarily, you're expected to be logged in or at your desk from 9 to 5 or 8 to 6. But a lot of people say that half of their day is just either busy work or them pretending to look busy because their boss is looking over their shoulder. And it like, it's horrible that their time is being wasted just for the sake of sitting at a desk and
it's
taking
totally
up space.
True. Yeah. It's totally true. And I remember, and I haven't worked in an office since 1997. That's how long I've had my own business. But back when I was working, there was always at least one guy who you couldn't get rid of. He would always show up in my office and just start talking and talking and talking. And it was like, so much of my day was spent just like dealing with this guy and his nonsense, or dealing with petty things, or going to get coffee and talking there. And it's just like, so much of what happens in an office environment isn't really work related. All that day could easily be cut down into, you know, a 3-hour day.
Can you imagine? Yeah. If I mean, again, like that would be a wonderful thing, I think, is like, if that's your job, is to get X number of tasks done, or, you know, I'm like, what do people in office jobs do? Emails. That's what I imagine. No, but yeah.
No, like, it should be more task related.
Whatever like, your tasks are.
Get this shit done.
Get
you're
it
good
done.
To go.
Yeah.
And then you
and
go.
And then you're done. If it takes you 3 hours, great. If it takes you 5 on a busier day, all right. But at least you're not forced to, again, just sit there.
Monday to
and
Friday,
perform.
8 through 5.
And then, yeah, like. I've heard.
I want to see your butt in that chair.
Exactly. I've heard from Nathan and his like work experiences, the workplace politics and comparing yourself to your coworkers. And yeah, it's like, oh, on Fridays we have like leave early Friday. Yet some people hang around longer to show that like they're willing to work more. It's wild. Yeah. I've also seen that with like PTO, a lot of companies now are offering unlimited PTO. But workers aren't taking it because there's not really a work culture that allows for that.
Yeah.
So it's like either you're going to be judged by your coworkers because they're going to have to pick up your slack. But it's like this is supposed to be a benefit that you have, yet you don't really because your workplace doesn't actually want you to take it. Yeah. So it's like in theory, you're like, I'm in this great position with all these great benefits. I won't use them, but...
And that's just the thing. And I think that was the problem that I think it was Netflix when they first started this a number of years ago, is that they had no vacation time. It was unlimited. Mm. You could set your own vacation time whenever you wanted. And they found the same thing, that people were taking like 5 days off a year because they're afraid that somebody else is going to jump in there.
Exactly. Well, yeah, if you're taking 2 weeks and then your coworker's like, oh, wow, I wouldn't take 2 weeks. I would never. It's like,
yeah, I wouldn't be caught doing that. Look at me. I'm working in my office.
I would only work all the time, and that's all. I love to do it. I don't even like sleeping or resting at all. It's so twisted. It's like so much of it is just mind games. And I feel like that's even true on YouTube. It's like I feel self-conscious. I'm like, oh, if people notice, like I'm only uploading 1 or 2 videos, even though they take a lot of time, like I still compare myself. I'm like, well, some other people are showing up and posting more videos.
Look at these guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm taking too much rest. It's like, that shouldn't be, my whole point is like, there shouldn't be a number of hours that everyone's expected to work or the number of hours that's okay to sleep. Like everyone has completely different limits and capabilities and energy levels and physical and mental conditions that affect that. And it's like, let alone like family, other life things. But But we still expect everyone to be able to perform the same way so that it makes it easy to compare people, you know, by the same metrics. But it's like, that's not how humans work. That's not how... I don't like when people make like these broad, like evolutionary arguments because usually they're not based in anything. But I think I can say that's not how people work. We are all very different. And we also don't live in a world that necessitates that, but we pretend that it does. Like we pretend like if people weren't working 40 hours, 5 days a week, that the world would fall apart. But it's like, actually, I think we'd be fine. We could get all the stuff done in a lot less work and we'd be a lot better off.
We'd probably be a lot less stressed out and there'd be a lot less anxiety and depression and other mental health issues in the world.
Yeah, and we'd get sleep, regenerative sleep.
There you go. So become a lazy YouTuber, everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Another lazy YouTuber here to tell you it's so easy. Anything I've said about YouTube, it's so easy. And
Steve, you made a video about that, right? Where it was like, it's not that hard of a job or something like that. I'm a second gen.
The YouTubers are like, whining about like minor things and like
versus people who legit these 15-hour jobs.
I know. I was like, there's guys who work in coal mines, and here I'm bitching because somebody left a mean comment.
Yeah, I didn't get enough views on my last video.
Well, Tiff, it was great having you on for the third time. We're gonna have to do it a fourth time. And
yes,
congratulations on the wedding going off without a hitch.
And
stop being so lazy.
Yeah. I'm gonna start uploading 30 times a month, so stay tuned.